तपाईँ एसपिएस नेपालीको साथमा हुनुहुन्छ। अरू रोचक सामग्रीहरूका लागि sbs.com.au/nepali जानुहोस्।
Namaste and hello. You're listening to SBS Nepali podcast. Search and rescue operations are still ongoing after last month's devastating Bhotekoshi Trishuli floods in central Nepal. The 26 August tsunami-like surge of water, mud and debris, which began on the Nepal-China border, has killed more than 1,300 people and left 5,130, including 587 foreigners, missing so far, according to Nepali authorities. The number of Australians unaccounted for remains at 35 at the time of this recording, and Australian government officials and disaster response personnel have been deployed to Nepal to support response efforts. Neither Nepal nor China has confirmed that any Australians are among the deceased. Some Australian disaster response specialists are currently on the ground, helping authorities assess damage and reach areas too dangerous to access on foot. Using advanced drone technology, Fire and Rescue New South Wales and Queensland Fire Department drone teams attached to the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade DFAT's assistance mission to Nepal are supporting local emergency efforts and recovery operations. My colleague Abhas Parazuli spoke with Superintendent Tim Hasiotis, the Operations Officer for the Fire and Rescue New South Wales Incident Management Team, who is currently deployed in Nepal as part of Australia's Disaster Assistance Response Team, DART, which is conducting mapping and thermal searches in the disaster-hit region, including the last known locations of some missing Australians. Warning, this content may be distressing for some listeners.
G'day team, how are you?
I'm well, Abhas, yourself?
Hey, good, thanks for making time. To start with, tell us a bit about yourself and what brought you to Nepal as part of this mission.
Yeah, no problem. So I work as a superintendent with Fire and Rescue New South Wales. My bailiwick is really natural disaster humanitarian, so supporting USAR and disaster assistance response team, both domestically and then for international response. So conversation with the Australian government, with Fire and Rescue New South Wales and our external partners after the landslide that struck Nepal was around the capability that we could offer to the government of Nepal, and obviously that was accepted. And we were very humbled and privileged to be able to come to Nepal and to try and effect some form of search and rescue and recovery for the people here.
And who's on ground with you, and kind of what expertise has Australia brought to support the response?
So we've got a mixture of a team set up. Predominantly, it's a drone or RPAS capability. So we're able to provide mapping. We can penetrate into tunnels, into buildings that may not have been searched yet. So that's quite a niche capability, but that's also complemented with an engineer or engineering support, as well as medicine. So we've got a paramedic from Ambulance New South Wales and an engineer from Public Works New South Wales. We're also the team comprised of fire and rescue personnel, has Queensland partners in that team as well. So in Australia, there's two teams that are able to, that have been classified under a global United Nations system, and Queensland and New South Wales are both representative of that.
And what does a typical day look like for you and the team? What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, we're predominantly working with the Nepali Army and supporting their operations. So yesterday we travelled up to, the pronunciation's very difficult to me, Shafrabenzi, and another town called Shafrabenzi. You did it much better for me. And Timor.
Yep.
These were some of the locations that some of the missing Australians had been located. So we went to those locations and we mapped that area and we were able to provide that intelligence back to Nepali Army, and that helps with their ongoing operations. It's difficult terrain here, as you can imagine, in Nepal, large mountains, narrow valleys. So that logistical tail of getting our teams to some of these locations is always by rotary lift. So we're using helicopters a lot through the Nepali Army. The team today, we have 6 members out at one of the hydro plants where there's tunnels that they're still making excavations into. And we're actually flying some of our drones into those tunnels, and we're able to get both video and audio feedback from those tunnels. And it gives the Army a better understanding of what the blockages are in those tunnels and potentially some of those refugee areas that are still within those tunnel complexes.
When you say about mapping, we generally tend to kind of see maps in terms of Google Earth or satellite mapping. How is that different to what you do?
So this is giving real-time current mapping. We can overlay it with the street structure that existed prior to this catastrophic event, and that provides some really good intelligence to those recovery efforts for the Nepali government, the NDRRMA, which is the government responsible for disaster risk mitigation and response here in Nepal. So that information then feeds into that broader picture of, okay, the damage on ground. And we're not the only team doing this. There is multiple teams doing this. Obviously, the Nepali government is leading all of this and they have some fantastic capability. We're supporting those efforts.
And what are some of the biggest challenges you are dealing with on ground at the moment?
As I said, transport is difficult. There is a lot of helicopter movements and this valley is quite narrow. So even flying drones within those areas, there's incursion with rotary lift aircraft. So we're very careful with the ceiling heights of that. And our pilots have constant communication with the helicopter pilots that are continuing to move up and down. The weather here, we're still in that monsoonal season. So every time we go anywhere, we take recon packs so that if we have to overnight wherever we may be, we're able to respond to that. The other challenge is just what we're seeing. I mean, the devastation, I'm sure everybody that's listening or viewing this has seen all of those horrible footages on the news, but being here and seeing that face to face and the trauma in people's eyes is something that is quite heartbreaking. But you know, the team knows their mission. They will push on and they will help as many people as we can. But that's definitely a challenge, is seeing that trauma and sorrow. It's interesting because when you look at where the damage has occurred, obviously along that catchment area. So if you go 2 or 3 blocks back, life continues and there's buildings which are not impacted. And for us as a team, we're used to going into sort of Turkey or earthquake where there's been that widespread devastation. But here you only see it as a very smaller area. It's still very significant, but you've got these people that live only a few blocks away. And for just an observation, they appear not to be impacted. But then when you delve deeper and you actually speak to these people, they've lost loved ones, they've lost neighbours, they've lost access to the schools, they've lost access to the hospitals. They can no longer get across the river to the other side where potentially they have family, potentially they have work. So that's really heartbreaking as well.
And can you tell us about the work being done to help locate foreign nationals and Australians? Is there any particular focus on that side, or are we just focusing on the general search and rescue operation?
So as I said, we're embedded with the Nepali Army and the tasking are dictated by the Nepali government. That's how we work in any deployment. Turkey was no different. When we went to Japan and New Zealand in 2011, very similar. So we work to try and complete any of the missions that we're tasked for. The Australian government's also working with the Nepali government, and we're trying to do everything we can to undertake all of those missions and all of those priorities.
You are with SBS Nepali Podcast and the conversation with Superintendent Tim Hasiotis, the Operations Officer for the Fire and Rescue New South Wales Incident Management Team, who is currently deployed in Nepal as part of Australia's Disaster Assistance Response Team, DART, will resume after this short break.
And you've been there for about a week. How have things changed for you and your team since you first arrived? Is it becoming more easier to work, or are you getting more hang of it, to say? How are things?
We're understanding the complexities of working here. We're getting better with the communications. Part of you and I talking today really demonstrates that. So we've got Starlink satellite systems that we're able to use even in some of these remote locations, which is giving us a lot of clarity where our team members are moving, and we can actually carry out accountability checks to make sure that people are safe, that rotary wing aircraft has actually landed at the site that they're going to work and when they leave. So that gives us a lot of solace. In terms of other changes, we're seeing people trying to return to some level of normalcy. The markets are open, the shops are open, but that underlying trauma is still really raw and something that we're seeing every day, and we can't help but be affected by it. Always on our minds is the people that have lost their lives and the people that are still missing. And we hope and pray that, you know, we can still have people that are still being recovered alive.
And looking ahead, what are the biggest priorities for you and the team over the next few days?
Always the team to maintain safety, working with the Nepali government to, if they're able to open up any more of these tunnel complexes, that we can go in and we can support them. Where their missions take them, we will continue to support them as much as we can. We are working with the army now as well to do some capacity building and helping some of these unique niche skills that we have as a UN registered team to try and pass some of those on.
And how have you found it working across the different languages and cultures? So obviously, you've mentioned there a few different other countries than Nepal, like Turkey and Japan, and now coming into Nepal. How is it easier, difficult? What are the more challenges as in terms of language and culture that you have to kind of understand when you go into field?
So, you know, naturally, as you spoke about, there's language and cultural nuances. We've learned, and I think we're very good at this, to require, you know, patience and flexibility. But we found that everyone we work with, all of those emergency responders everywhere around the world, have one purpose, and that's to help people in need. So that's the underlying mission. Everybody understands that. And despite any of those particular language challenges, we're able to overcome that pretty quickly. I think one of the points that really stuck with me yesterday, we're out at Timor, and one of the Nepali army generals or colonels was speaking to me, and he was talking about the beauty of this country that still exists. And it is beautiful, beautiful country. The people are the most hospitable people I've ever met. But he put his hand up and he said, we were standing sort of on one of these villages that had been impacted quite significantly, and on the other side of the riverbank, you could see very similar. So he put his hand up and he said, you know, if you put your hand here, you can see what is still beautiful in Nepal. And then when you remove your hand, you see the devastation. And he was, I guess, trying to get that impression to us and to project back to the Australian community. But Nepal is a beautiful country. It will remain a beautiful country despite this tragedy, despite the consequences of what happened. People will still come back here. They will still be treated like family, which is what we're treated by the Nepali people, and they still get to experience this most wonderful, wonderful country, people and culture.
And when you eventually leave Nepal, what will be success looking like for you and the team?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think success isn't about Australians taking the lead. It's really about us helping those local authorities achieve their objectives. And if our support helps towards that, that's a significant measure of success. I think another really important measure of success is the relationship and capability that we build through this deployment, especially with our Nepali counterparts. And if they feel that we have supported them and we've been useful and we strengthen those partnerships for future cooperation, then that's a really positive outcome.
A large section of Australian community, as you know, is following the events in Nepal very closely. What message would you like to share with them and with the people in Nepal affected by this disaster?
Yeah, I guess I'd like them to understand that we stand with them in solidarity. We understand their pain and their suffering, and we feel it on the ground here. I can guarantee you every team member that we have feels that same pain and sorrow with them. And we just hope that people are able to recover, that they can build back, and that they're a more resilient community. We've seen parts of that already occurring. A good example was the Red Cross have built a sort of a cableway across the Trishuli River here, and that's allowing the Nepali people get from one side to the other side. If that wasn't there, the travel time by road would be 12, 14 hours, so something that's just unachievable. So having that shows that resilience, and that's something that, you know, we're really proud to, or we're really privileged to be able to see, and part of that recovery process already occurring.
Yeah, and before coming to Nepal, when you kind of knew you were coming to Nepal, you must have some expectations when you were boarding that flight. And what's been the biggest thing you've kind of learned since arriving, and what was it like surprised you the most?
I think to myself, and I imagine I could speak quite clearly for the other team members, trepidation's a big thing when we come on these missions. We're always very, very nervous. Are we going to be able to deliver the services? Are we going to help the people? Because that's ultimately why we're here. It's normally very well or quickly dispelled. We've got significant training. The equipment that we carry is leading in innovation. And once we start to operate that and rely back on that tacit knowledge that we have, things come together really quickly.
Do you miss your kids and family?
Oh, of course. We all miss our families. Our families are very understanding of the roles that we play. Like I said, this isn't, unfortunately, it's not an uncommon occurrence for the DART teams, either in Queensland or New South Wales, to deploy during 2024, close to Christmas. A predominantly Queensland team deployed to Vanuatu following those tragic earthquakes. So our family are adjusted to this. It's not to say that they don't miss us, and I definitely miss them. It's my son's birthday today. I'm not there for that. We do have really good support channels back home. So Fire and Rescue New South Wales has opened up a private Facebook page where they're actually able to link into our families. So that's something that brings our families much comfort, as well as provide them updates. I think it was on the second or third day we were here, there was a 5.4 magnitude earthquake. So one of the things that our team does back home is link into family straight away to say, you know, we've accounted for your loved ones. They are still safe. And that gives us a surety that our families aren't worried, and it allows us to really concentrate on the mission.
And how long do you expect to be in Nepal for?
We'll be here as long as it takes to support the Nepali government. Normally, when we come on any of these missions, we have 14 days of self-sustainability. That's not to say we can't do a resupply, but we'll work with the Nepali government until they no longer need that capability.
Very well. Is there anything that you'd like to say?
I guess I'd like to thank the Australian government, so our partners, particularly with Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and the National Emergency Management Agency, for being so quick to respond to this effort and allowing us the privilege to be here and to help the Nepali people. This will be something that I carry for the rest of my life, and I can speak freely for the other team members as well. I know they will carry that same sense of responsibility, but also humbleness that we've been here helping Nepali people.
And that was Australia's Disaster Assistance Response Team, DART's Tim Hasiotis, from the city of Bidur in central Nepal, speaking to my colleague Abhas Parazuli in Melbourne about how the team is working in Nepal to support its search and rescue mission after the deadly floods of August 26. We would like to inform you that the views expressed in this conversation are solely those of the speaker, and SBS neither endorses nor opposes these views. Australians seeking emergency consular assistance are advised to contact the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade DFAT's 24-hour consular emergency centre on 1300 555 135. 1300 555 135, or from overseas on +61 2 6261 3305. Listeners seeking crisis support can contact Lifeline on 131114, Beyond Blue on 1300 224636, Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467, and Kids Helpline on 1800 551800 for young people aged up to 25. More information and support with mental health is available at lifeline.org.au or beyondblue.org.au. In an emergency, call 000. For more content and the latest on the floods, follow SBS Nepali wherever you get your podcasts or visit sbs.com.au/Nepali. You can also download the SBS Audio app for free from App Store or Google Play.
Like, share, recommend, SBS Nepali, Facebook, Saath Dinos.